Бабаш,
привет. Приходь до нас.
Come on, voices.
Hello, my name is Lika Tolaraya. Today we are in Radio Corax on Common Voices. We'll talk about two different but very interesting themes. The first hour we will talk in English and then we will switch in Ukrainian language. And today we have very interesting guests. The first is Martin Schalek. He was a student of Bauhaus Constructor University in Weimar. And we will talk about his research, namely master's thesis, which he dedicated to the research of the way between Western Europe and Ukraine during the war. We will talk about not just traveling, but some historical moments. And the second hour, we will talk with our guest, Irina Avramenko, about her book and also about her research, which is about Russian propaganda, also actual team. And in our first hour, we have one more guest. She is a traveler from Ukraine, Anastasia. And now let's begin. Martin, tell us about your project, please.
So it was about movement, and I called it spatial practices of moving people.
So it is not a typical architectural topic. It's not about buildings, but different spaces and how people make those spaces theirs. And my name is Anastasia. I'm an activist. And I'm also a traveler. And I'm here with
Lika. My name is Lika. I am a journalist. And we would like to talk about Martin's master's work and about his research. And of course, about traveling in general, about our experience. Martin, could you tell us about your research?
Yes, so I studied architecture, which I finished recently, and each study has to be finished somehow. And since I was for a longer time interested in movement and traveling, I thought I could link it somehow with architecture. And it came together with my own experience of being, let's say, a small-scale migrant who moved from Czech Republic to Germany, where I went for studies. And I had a lot of experiences coming from between my hometown and between Weimar, which is a long trip of 10 hours. During this time, I want to be productive. I want to do something. I want to read, work on the laptop, just use it well, sleep maybe. So this was the base that I built on. But also it was about other people who have similar experiences of having to move because they want it like some kind of important thing, how they can maybe improve their lives, maybe even make them live in a safer environment in case of war refugees. I was focusing on the fact of movement and on this activity and how long it takes, how much barriers people have to overcome to move their body simply between two places.
Yeah, and I know that you made a dozen of interviews with different people about the experience, and based on these interviews, you made your diploma work.
Made it based on the interviews. I'd had different phases, but the final work was based on interviews, on the individual fates of people that I met and that I talked with.
You mostly interviewed people who moved between Germany and Ukraine, right?
Yes, I would say it was mostly people from Ukraine. I focused on the route between Germany through Poland, Ukraine. There is also Polish people, there is also Czech people, there is people who move through Europe with different regions. In this my region, it was mainly people between Germany and Ukraine.
You yourself took this route several times after the beginning of the full-scale war. Could you tell us about your experience?
Yes, I performed this route first before I was doing this work, just out of experience. I had the opportunity to visit Ukraine in more than a year ago. And also I was doing an exchange semester in Krakow in Poland, which could be more than half of the way to Ukraine. So I moved a lot between also Germany and Krakow. And then when I started working on this work, I interviewed people that I knew they are moving on this route. And I also went there by myself and I was trying to meet people, hitchhike, talk with drivers, go on trains, talk with people who travel on trains.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Me and Lika, we also took this route many times. And I took this route with different means of transportation on land. Transportation, because currently there is no flight. I think here I would tell you a bit how we met. Me and Martin, I used to live in Lviv and I used to host lots of people. There are like hospitality websites and like almost every weekend, especially in summer, I had guests from all over the world. And Martin was one of them.
I remember that that when I arrived, you gave me a lot of potatoes that I had to peel so that we could make soup.
Unforgettable, yeah?
Unforgettable experience. And then about a year ago, Martin texts me on that website, "Hey, remember me? I am now again in your district, not far from your home." And I was like, "What? What are you doing there? Like during the war? Why did you come there?" At that moment, I was in Germany, so I wouldn't be able to host him there anyways in Lviv. But yeah, and then a couple months later, I was going to Ukraine or from Ukraine, I don't remember, through Krakow. Martin hosted me in his dorm in Krakow. And then he told me that he studies in Weimar. And it turned out that Weimar is very close to Halle. Yeah, it was a really nice connection. And then he told me that he wanted to interview me for this master's.
Yeah, I would say also your visit in Krakow was also like a forming aspect because I could see more, you know, somebody who is directly in the middle of their trip. That you were like, "Oh, I don't know if I will come at this time because nobody wants to take me with hitchhiking. Oh, then I have to come by train." And then the next day, "Oh, I think I need to go to this service station and I need to pick up like weather," because it was in winter, "dress very warm and just take this thermos full of food so that I'm safe on the road and I can eat something."
Yeah, it's a very comfortable, like food thermos, a very comfortable thing to have on the road. I strongly recommend to all the moving people.
I bought my one for myself as well.
So it's a story of our acquaintance. I was just going from the gym on Sunday. It was in empty streets. And I directly bumped in Nastya and Martin. I didn't know him then. They were going to make an interview for his master's. And I thought, "Wow, I'm a journalist. I can help to make an interview." But finally, Martin took an interview from me. So we participated in his master's.
Yeah. Liko also talked about her experience of moving between Germany and Ukraine.
I live in Dnipro, very close to the front line of battle. So we shared our experience for Martin. And when he invited us for the presentation, we saw some pictures of our stories.
Illustrations.
And it was very, very impressive because... And now, nowadays, we have a special situation with moving between Western Europe to Ukraine. Many things have changed since the invasion. For example, since 2022, there are no flights and people have very limited options to travel. And the conditions of this traveling, which have changed. And we would like to talk about this today. For example, Martin, during your traveling now and before, what have changed?
I think maybe the people who travel as well, it maybe for myself, it changed a lot because I was younger and, and maybe a bit different.
We all were younger and different.
In 2018. I think that the biggest thing that happened is that just you started moving, for example. There is a lot of people that started moving because there is no airplanes. There is a lot of movement because a lot of people left Ukraine and they are coming back for different reasons. So I would say that the volume is actually the big change. You know, all the infrastructure that is designed for processing these people cannot improve over when war starts. So I know there is efforts and there is things that are improving on the routes, but in general, it's very unsatisfactory. in Fesefe satisfactory. Like all the border crossings have very long waiting times. And I think in the past it was not like this.
Okay, we started talking about the border.
Yeah, no, about the border, I can say my experience when I was going from Lviv to Germany. And I took a ticket for a bus. And then when we came to the border, we were said that you have to wait 24 hours. Because in front of us, there were 24 buses and 1 hour for each bus, means 24 hours. And, you know, I had real panic attack because there was no
pedestrian
station. Yeah, there had no pedestrian. I didn't know what to do because I hadn't any desire to wait a day. Just wait, except the road itself to Germany, I mean. And I came to the border and asked a soldier, what should I do? I literally had panic. It was huge stress. And he told me, you can get some car, ask someone to get you. Just try it because there is no any option. I came to the first bus closest to the border and asked him whether he can take me on. And he agreed.
Did you have to pay?
Yes, I asked how much I have to pay. He told about 10 euros. It was very, very generous of him.
Okay.
Because he could use this situation and say, for example, 10 times more expensive. But he was very kind and I was saved.
Yeah, I normally, like these days, before I used to normally go like hitchhike to the border, then get out of the car and like walk to the first like car in the line and then like ask like who could take me across the border, because I know that cars also take a long time to wait, sometimes 6 hours, sometimes more. Normally like up to fifth car would take me across the border, but these days the cars are normally like filled with kids and stuff, so I just go by foot.
Sorry, for which you can only use one crossing, right?
Yeah, only Shehini, Medyka Shehini.
Yeah,
like Polish-Ukrainian border and Medyka Shehini, Lviska Oblast.
Yeah, this is about the situation between Europe and Ukraine now. And now I would like to listen a song from Martin's music list, which he used to listen during his numerous traveling. So let's listen. So we came to the border of Ukraine, and now we will talk about the what is after the border. The road after the border. Okay, we crossed the border.
But let's ask Martin about his experience. Like,
I mean, my experience is also like very much influenced by also my talking with people. Myself physically crossing the border was just a few times, so maybe I don't have such a representative experience. What for sure was a good way was to go by train, which was not always easy to find, but it was probably the most convenient, even though also the train goes very slowly and the check is perfect. Performed, and then it's also performed in the station in Przemyśl. But I wanted to add also what I found is, like, you as travelers, you can operate, you can go to the bus in front, you can go, you can cross if it's possible, you can cross on foot. But if you are, for example, a driver of a truck or of a van, of a car as well, then especially of the trucks, because you stay there for 24 hours and you cannot move because you are responsible for the trucks, and like every hour you have to move in front, and then you again
a few centimeters every like 15 minutes.
One truck driver told me that only when it's a driver's birthday they are allowed to skip the line.
That's interesting. And how was it for you personally to cross the border?
I would say that first was by train. That was pretty straightforward. I went to Ukraine by train. You board the train, and then they wake you up at night and scan your passport, and there is a dog sniffing around your baggage. I think the little bit when I went back, for example, from Ukraine sometime, you know that at some point the queue splits into two, the EU passports and the non-EU passports. The non-EU passports is much longer, and I think that probably the customs officers on the Polish sides probably perform a much stricter check. I was talking with some people about, you know, what kind of food you can carry across the border, and one of them told me, oh, I would never like have some sausage or some cheese in my backpack because it's forbidden, and they always check me a lot. It also depends on the border. I know that she was talking about the Hungarian border, when you go on a bus to Hungary, and maybe that's also a little bit different political situation as well. Maybe she remembers that always somebody in the bus has some kind of food in the bags that they shouldn't have, and then they have to get out of the bus. And first the bus is either delayed a lot or they just don't continue with this person. And myself, I often like carry food items that actually shouldn't be carried.
Sometimes
I even like, you know, like some cheese that a friend from Uzbekistan gave to me. He brought it from Uzbekistan to Germany by airplane, which was already forbidden. It's like a dried cheese. Then I took this cheese and I went on my trip to Ukraine. I just had it in my backpack because it's like small balls that you can eat. It's called kur. And I forgot about it. It's like it was just somewhere in my backpack. And then like we went on the train from Chop to Prague with some people. And during the check, we already started talking. And then I was like, actually, I can offer them some food. So I would ask them, do you want some cheese from Uzbekistan that already crossed the Schengen border like three times?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, that reminds me how people normally act on the border. So there are like, one person is allowed to have two packs of cigarettes and 1 liter of Horilka vodka. And then there are like, all the time, there is somebody who asks you, do you have cigarettes? Can you take some on you?
Yeah.
Or like,
it's
could you
story,
just
yeah.
maybe take another bottle of Horilka? As long as I hate cigarettes, I always refuse. And sometimes there are people who try to cheat and they just like hide cigarettes whenever it's possible. Like women hiding in their bra or something like that.
Yeah,
underwear.
But cigarettes, and how about salo? Salo, it's very important for every Ukrainian product. You know, very many stories around this product, yes, and the people trying to hide in different pieces of clothes and whatever you name it. I have heard many stories, but I don't want to tell the secrets. And let's talk about the road across Ukraine. For example, I can start with my experience. When I cross the border, I have at least 24 hours to get to my city because the road lasts 18 hours. And all these 18 hours, I can sleep in some coupe or Platzkart. Martin, I have seen a Platzkart in your project.
Picture.
Yes, I recognized this Platzkart by feet.
From the top benches.
Yeah. Could you tell about this? Because it's very important sport in your project.
It is very Ukrainian. Let's talk a little bit how the normal Ukrzaliznytsia, Ukrainian railways. We have these platskarts, so it's bunk beds, but they open couches.
Yes.
And there is always very peculiar smell of boiled
Not
eggs.
Always, but sometimes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Very often there is very peculiar smell of different smells of food. Normally these are cooked eggs, pickled cucumbers, stinky feet. Yeah. And then there is and then the sounds of snoring. Yeah, and then Martin, you drew this picture of the feet hanging from the top bank. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's a very interesting setting for to look at it from a experience of architecture, because we somehow design and also look at spaces where people stay, where people live. And normally we when we are drawing a building, apartment building, everybody is closed in their apartment and doing something privately. But in this Platzkartny open air bunk bed wagon, everybody is in the same space and you are together, as you say, at 20 hours maybe, and you are sleeping and dining and chatting and reading and I don't
living.
Know.
Living.
Yeah. Yes.
But I would like to ask, for example, your supervisor, when they see this picture, didn't they ask what is this? Because
why
I don't know
picture?
Whether in German wagons we don't have some kind of wagon like Platzkartny.
Actually, I mean, if you board an ICE that goes all the way across Germany, there is also a lot of people who travel on a very long distance there. So it's not like they would be sleeping in the beds, because there are no beds, unfortunately. But still, people always adapt to, when you sit down for multiple hours, you put your coat somewhere, you put your laptop, your book, your drink, your feet, you put them on the next seat and so on. So you also kind of make it alive. I remember that also on a night, the ICE that goes between Munich and Berlin, and a lot of people just use it even just for sleeping, but it's on seating, so it's not definitely not healthy. So I would say that it's just a very condensed experience of this in when you are traveling in Ukraine, because I guess if you are moving in Europe, there is not so much so intensive long distance movement on the trains.
But how was it for you to be in this Platzkart? What did you see and how did you feel?
Did you feel this atmosphere?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, also, I traveled often overnight, so I tried to sleep. And when I sleep and the train is going over the railway switch, to-doom, to-doom, to-doom.
For me, it's more choo-choo. For me, it's lulling, soothing.
Lullaby.
Yeah.
And then somehow, and there is no air conditioning, so it's a bit it's not so optimized maybe
for
sleeping.
No, new trains have the air conditioning, but the old trains, Oh, yeah, and then there is fight for the open window in the night. It's a whole different topic also. Open the window, close the window. Okay, what was the longest time in the train you took?
I never took long, actually, because when I'm traveling on these kind of trains, I'm typically in a mood of not I have to go somewhere very far. I'm more traveler and explorer. And especially now in my trips to Ukraine, I was mainly in the West and I was more interested in the journey between Ukraine and Germany. So I was never, the longest one now in Ukraine was from Uzhhorod to Lviv, which was just one night. But before that, previously in my other trip that I undertook to Central Asia a few years ago, I remember that I was for 17 hours on a train between Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. So that was probably my longest experience.
Mm-hmm.
And now we would like to continue with the Ukrainian song. Its name translated I don't have a home. This song is also from the music list of Martin. Let's enjoy it.
За правилом доброго ремені згадаю, з якої я племені, пригадаю, з якого міста, я чекаю на свої гривні, мені просто нема де сісти, написати свою промову. У мене немає дому. Сути за день свої бетоні, сути, а день шикуватись, сухнути людям першу, другу сорту, а люди такі сотням в тандемі зі своїми висотками, з третього, сьомого герцями, герцями сповнюють все сенсами, сенсами. Тепер я ніколи нічого нікому, тепер ж ділю свою колу і більше. Але врешті, а втім, я б у мене будів, я б лишила його на людей, на котів, я б пошила усіх, я не люблю котів. Хей, люди, такі сути за день свої бито. Сухнути людям першу, другу сорту, а люди такі сотнями в тандемі зі своїми висотками, з третього, сьомого герцями, герцями сповнюють все сенсами, сенсами.
Now we would like to talk about our favorite Deutsche Bahn and Ukrzaliznitsa. So we asked Martin to explain and elaborate his opinion about the difference between two railway companies. So let's listen what he had said. About spaces. Every railway company has its own features, like, you know, Ukrzaliznice, Deutsche Bahn. Can you name some differences?
Yeah, between contrast them? And yeah. Compare.
Contrasting, yeah, or similarities maybe.
Yeah, so as we live in Germany, we know how Deutsche Bahn can be unreliable. And also as somebody like me who, for example, goes between Czech Republic and Germany, and if I go from Germany to Czech Republic, I cannot rely on that I will manage to get home because it can already get like ruined the trip in the beginning just by missing some German train and then, like, none of these connections are direct, so that's already difficult. While in Ukraine, I told you I haven't traveled that much, but people say that it's reliable and on time. I have a little bit looked also into the reasons why it is so, why it's in Germany so unreliable in Ukraine.
Why?
It is about money. because you would say maybe Germany is richer, so it should be able to afford more reliable railways. But also it is about, you know, how you politically decide about allocate funds. What I found out about Deutsche Bahn is that they have been cutting the cost wherever it was possible to cut, because they were like, oh, we have to save money. And every maintenance of anything, for example, empty track, is very expensive in Germany. So you just cancel empty tracks in stations, because because if they are not actively used by trains, because if you want to keep them running then you have to pay a lot of money for that. While I imagine, I mean, in my country it's kind of also easier because like it doesn't cost so much to have an empty track. Like in Germany, I guess you have to have like a insurance for empty track and so on. So you can afford more empty tracks, and it, for example, in Ukraine probably as well, which means that in case there is some kind of issue on the railway, suddenly like more trains appear in the station or something, you can put them on these empty tracks. In Germany, no. Oh. Suddenly you find out that you don't have, so every, like, this is like, even one train gets delayed, then all of them also get delayed. So there is like not enough buffer. I mean, they try to, I guess, fix it somehow nowadays, but even fixing it means like building and making construction, which means even more delays. So I think it's like somehow under investment at some point in the past, while I suppose that, you know, the train probably that you are taking to Dnipro, that I also took just for a part of the journey to Ternopil only. Mm-hmm. But like it has also like very long breaks, like you come somewhere and you mm-hmm. have time to go outside for a cigarette.
And then Perishki on Zmarinka, do you pass by Zmarinka?
Yeah,
there is a town on the way to the eastern part of Ukraine called Zmarinka. It's very famous because there are people, mostly women, selling homemade food like vareniki and stuff. And like when I was visiting my family in Bashkortostan, it's like 3 days in the train from Lviv, like one day to Kharkiv, 24 hours to Kharkiv, and then 48 hours from Kharkiv. Our mom would always buy something in Zmarinka because it was one of the few possibilities to get normal food in the train.
Delicious food.
Delicious food. Yeah.
That's what also my parents actually told me, because one of the reasons why I went to Ukraine for the first time is that my parents, when they were young in the 90s, they traveled to Ukraine and they traveled through Ukraine, and they were telling all these stories of buying food from the window of the train. And I was like thinking, okay, I should also go to I would say it's a little bit different from what they told me, but I just want to say maybe that that about still this investment, that some friends of mine who understand a little bit like public transport say that it's much more important to have a reliable system if you want to have people comfortable with using it than a system where trains go 300 kilometers per hour, but you cannot rely on it.
True.
I remember now, before the war, there was some news that Deutsche Bahn had some experience exchange program with Ukrzaliznica, and Ukrzaliznica had to study from Deutsche Bahn how to manage their work. And now I see it's like it sounds like some joke, because during the war, under all this missiles and shooting
drones,
and hits blackouts, Ukrzaliznica operating in time and
What their like message is. I'm sorry, there was like another attack on the train tracks along the way. That's why we are like 15 minutes late. We are terribly sorry, but we're delivering everybody safe and sound in one piece. And here's like Deutsche Bahn. Oh, sorry, the snow fell and the trains are not running. Like, what? Ukrzaliznica is normally very much reliable and we love it for that. And then there are like people who are like taking people from literally from hell. Like the work, we call them Zalizni Lude, like the iron people, because they do like terribly difficult and important work, like evacuating wounded soldiers. And in the beginning of the full-scale war, they evacuated thousands, hundreds of thousands of people from the cities and towns that have been bombed to the west of Ukraine, to the safer places. Did you take one of these evacuation trains?
No, I was leaving Ukraine by bus. My road from Ukraine to Italy took 4 days, and three of them were across Ukraine. When we were sitting on the bus, the driver told us that adults have to sit on the right side and the children on the left. He said, because if there will be some shooting, this will be adult side. So, yes, in this atmosphere, we didn't know if we survive or not. And another point was that at night, we turned off all the light. We were just waiting in full darkness.
Oh.
and
like in the middle of
without
nowhere.
Moving because it was dangerous. Our phones were off, not to be noticeable for Russian soldiers.
Missiles.
Yeah,
that sounds tough. I am more like to be born in the west side of Ukraine, but people told me who took the trains, and I also read the stories that like the trains were packed, like literally packed. Like there were people also even in the toilets and like between the couches and between the wagons.
Yeah, a friend who took it, she told me also like children were lying on the luggage rack above, like they just put some jacket on the top and put the children to sleep there.
And then there were like thousands more people left waiting for the next train at the train station.
Yeah, and nobody knows what is awaiting.
There is a book written about Ukrzaliznytsa. I hope they will translate it. So there's like a journalist wrote stories connected to Ukrzaliznytsa. A very nice book, very touching.
Yeah, and I would like to highlight that Ukrzaliznytsa is now the main option for moving of politics.
Yeah,
important
people.
Prime ministers and deputies and so on.
Yeah, presidents are coming to...
Presidents.
Yeah, they all take this Ukrzaliznytsa train from Przemysl to Kyiv. Of course, they have like super comfortable wagons, but yeah, they all, of course, appreciate that very much.
Yeah, and I would like to thank Martin for his research because it's also documenting of this historical times, not only some research, historical document.
Yeah, we live now in such tough and complicated times. And the next song is from Iranian band Palette. It's a both in German and Persian language. It's also from the music list of Martin. So let's hear the band Palette, Ain't My Home.
سربازی سربازی را کشت گوسفندی سربازی گرگم به هوا گرگی را خورد دستهایی روی آسفالت خیابان ها جان می دادن بالهایی زیر سایه سرد تفنگی بی جان میمود Im Wert wo das Ortseingangsschild vertauscht Das ist nicht mehr meine Stadt, alles sieht hier so anders aus Ich erkenne nichts wieder, da drüben zum Beispiel das graue Haus Das war mal blutrot, doch jetzt tragen sie die Farben aus der Stadt hinaus Es ist, als ob der Himmel sich um ein, zwei Meter verschoben hat. Alles Runde ist eckig, jedes Dreieck ein perfektes Quadrat. Und die Menschen sind seltsam verformt, sie tragen Lautsprecher statt ihrer Ohren. Und wenn sie reden, fallen die Wörter aus dem Himmel ihren Hals hinab.
Irgendwas läuft falsch, hier, das ist nicht mehr meine Stadt. Irgendwas läuft falsch, hier, das ist nicht mehr meine Stadt.
wohl das Ortseingangsschild vertauscht. Das ist nicht mehr meine Stadt, alles sieht hier so anders aus. Ich erkenne nichts wieder, dort drüben zum Beispiel das graue Haus. Das war mal quietschbunt, doch jetzt tragen sie die Farben aus der Stadt hinaus.
Sarbazi, Sarbazi, so Sarbazi, Sarbazi, Rako. گرگم به هوا گرگی رو خواب برادر
رو این رسول فلشی دست است نیش به من اشتر
the last part of our interview with Martin. We would like to talk about his future plans, and he is making ready a surprise for us. Well, let's listen what exactly he is preparing.
Okay, and I know that after the diploma, you are working on some game.
Yes! Tell us about your game.
I wouldn't say that my work is actually finished, the diploma. I mean, de jure, it's finished. I graduated, but I still want to develop it somehow. Uh-huh. But already my brain came up with another idea what to do. So this experience of movement, of traveling, especially by train, because somehow I had restricted in my mind. The idea was to make a game out of the experiences that people told me that I have experienced by myself about moving across Europe. It is a board game I'm developing where you sit around the table. On the table is a map of Europe with all the railways, and you have to roll a dice and you have to move your figures and you have to fulfill missions, for example, that are related to real people that you know, that I know. For example, I can just make a persona about somebody who needs to move from city A to city B, that is, for example, a respondent of my thesis, and then you can play for this person and you have to competing against also other people who are also moving in different routes or the same route. I still have to develop it a little more to find out, but there you also draw cards, like there is this factor of luck and unluck that we know from movement and and then it's like you meet a nice conductor, so you get comfort plus one, or you meet football fans, so you get mood minus four. You also like try somehow, because I also like my thesis work was also I tried to make it a little bit through the drawings, like a little bit more empathetic about like how you feel about yourself when you are moving. So then in this game you have like mood, comfort, energy, focus, and you are trying to keep all of these stats like high, but then suddenly you meet football fans and everything's bad.
Yeah, and this game, is it for adults or children of all ages?
I think it's a little bit more for adults for now, because you know, you have seen the drawings that I did for my thesis. A lot of them are like very somehow banal, like mm-hmm. you just have a black and white drawing of something
monochrome.
Yeah,
like look like either it is a sketch or it is like some kind of technical drawing. Mm-hmm. And also this game is a little bit about like this traveling is not a fairy tale, it's not like you are discovering new horizons. it is not in my game, but I just remembering like when I was searching some about how to go to Ukraine, then it gave me like advertisements, like pre-made automatic advertisements that was like travel to Medica is the border crossing with Ukraine, enjoy your travel, like discover new horizons. And like some idea of happy people with sunglasses.
Wow.
I mean, if you see a smiling person with sunglasses, maybe it would be a good holiday destination.
Yeah, in these dark times on the road, these interactions with people have place for some humor and happiness. And it's written on your diploma.
Yes, that was like my dedication to all the people who move, even though it's difficult.
Uh-huh, nice.
Could you please explain?
Elaborate.
Elaborate this.
I mean, like the people that I met, the people that I did interviews, they all made like impression on me, like of being very sturdy and like not being afraid of the challenges. And I would say it's something that we should value, this courage. That's why I dedicated my work to them.
I remember that your supervisor said, like, they noticed that you didn't call them like migrants or something else or refugees or travelers. You just called them moving people.
Yes, I chose this definition first of all because I'm not very in social science and I don't know how to describe people in as in some scientific way. And for me, it's just people who are moving, so I call them moving people.
But it's also beautiful.
I think it's more about spaces, but it has a place for philosophical and social themes. And it was very interesting how you connect all this in your work.
Maybe something that people should keep in mind if they want to take this route.
I think that actually for any route, I mean, between Germany and Ukraine, I think when they are going for the first time, they have to be ready for things that they don't know about. And I think when they are traveling, moving second times or third times, they will already very well use the experience that they collected before. So I think actually learning from your own experience could be the best that helps you in your next journeys. I mean, somehow your body will signal also what you need to do. People use music with headphones. I think very useful is a power bank, for example, maybe something to put over your eyes so that you can just limit your cognitive capacity and just have some time for yourself. Even though you are sitting in a full bus or full train, can help.
Yeah, I remember the story that impressed me the most, the story in Zgorzelec-Görlitz. Could you share that story?
Yes, that was a story of one moving student who moves between Germany and Poland, and she passes through the station of Görlitz. And over there, she came there late in the evening, and there was somebody on a wheelchair on the train. But actually, the station hall in Görlitz, which also has the lift access, is already closed.
It's at the German side.
It's on the German side. And the only way how they could find out the man and the woman on the wheelchair, the man was not having a wheelchair, but he was accompanying her, was that he just had to carry her and carry the wheelchair through the stairs because that was the only side of the railway station that was open after midnight, even though there are still trains arriving. I know that this case has actually also been somehow commented in Bundestag, but what I see behind it, that first of all, there is like not enough investment in infrastructure in Germany because you just need to pay somebody because of vandalism. So you just need to employ somebody who will stay there and maybe take care of the station 1 hour longer after midnight because after the last train arrives. And somehow the center of power in Germany could view Görlitz as the end of the world, right? It's like, no, why would anybody go there? There is like no communication between like moving people who, for example, are citizens of Poland or Ukraine who often go through Zgorzelec to board on Polish train and continue their trip. And I can imagine that in the mind of somebody who is deciding about this funding and deciding that, okay, we will close the station in Zgorzelec at night, is like, why would even somebody go to Zgorzelec to it's the end of the world at the end of the day. There is for sure nobody who will actually need it. Like these people who are moving, they don't have like any democratic rights. Misunderstanding between the needs and what should be provided.
Like the infrastructure is not adapted for the moving people. Your work has opened our eyes to so many issues that, and I hope that those people in power, the decision makers, could hear us, you read your work, your presentation, take it into consideration. Thank you so much for the work you did.
Martin, thank you for coming. We are waiting for the game.
Yeah. We will play all together at the radio.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, thank you also so much for inviting me and also for speaking with me the first time. And it's great to be here and to...
Yeah, we had a lot of fun talking to you. We are always happy to talk to you and to see you.
Yeah, exactly. We had a lot of fun and now we're waiting for... February, because in February, Martin promised us to hold the test game. So we are participating in testing of the, of his game and longing for this day. So, yes, the connection between people can connect on our common way, such different persons, but this allows us to make some common project like today's show. And the next hour we will speak in Ukrainian language. We will have another guest, and our next theme is also very actual, and also touch the theme of the war. So, our next guest, Irina Avramenko, she is an author and researcher who wrote a book about Russian propaganda, and now we are switching in Ukrainian language. Добрий день усім, хто сьогодні з нами в ефірі. Я хочу представити вам нашу наступну гостю. Це Ірина Авраменко, письменниця з Дніпра, яка написала книгу, що називається «Deconstruction of Truth» in English. І це означає «Деконструкція правди». Ця книга буде про пропаганду так званих «хороших русських». Що саме ми маємо на увазі під терміном «хороші русські» і про зміст книги, ми поговоримо з Іриною, яка сьогодні у нас в гостях.
Салам алейкум. Привіт.
Привіт. Сьогодні ми продовжуємо наше шоу на Радіо Коракс Common Voices. І другу годину ми хочемо присвятити такій темі, як пропаганда хороших русських. В гостях у нас Ірина Авраменко, письменниця з Дніпра, яка є співавторкою книги «Deconstruction of Truth», що в перекладі означає «деконструкція правди». Ця книга була написана на незвичну для нас тему. Всі ми знаємо, що таке пропаганда Кремля, тобто вона у нас асоціюється з виключно негативними емоціями і має негативний контекст. Але дуже мало хто замислюється над пропагандою так званих «хороших русських». І саме про це сьогодні ми хочемо поговорити з Іриною. Ірино, добрий день. Рада, що ви до нас завітали сьогодні. Ірина видала дуже цікаву книгу, яка стосується незвичного погляду на російську пропаганду. Тобто ми всі знаємо про явище російської пропаганди, але існує така річ, як прихована російська пропаганда, яку транслюють так звані «хороші русські». Ірино, будь ласка, розкажіть, про що ваша книга і чим вона відрізняється від книг про просто російську пропаганду.
Добрий день. Дійсно, ідея книги виникла на самому початку війни. Я є медіаексперткою Інституту демократії імені Пилипа Орлика. Це відома демократична організація, яка займається питаннями медіа, питаннями захисту журналістів, питаннями пропаганди, питаннями медійної освіти. І на початку війни мені запропонували доєднатися до проєкту професорки Донецького університету імені Стуса Наталки Стеблини. Вона перша, хто почала досліджувати ще на початку війни тему російської пропаганди так званих «хороших росіян». Чому це тоді було важливо? Сьогодні ми вже знаємо, що то є «хороші росіяни», і принаймні достатньо велика кількість людей знають, чого від них чекати.
А можете пояснити, що це таке «хороші росіяни»? Що ми вкладаємо в це поняття?
«Хороші росіяни» – для мене цей термін, він настільки вже в моєму житті, але коли я спілкувалася з людьми, я часто мене теж запитую, та що ж таке ці «хороші росіяни»? Чому вони хороші? Хороші тому, що на перший погляд це люди, це відомі російські інфлюенсери, які позиціонують себе противниками війни за мир проти Путіна. І більшість українців на початку війни ця позиція обманювала. Якщо ми згадаємо перший рік війни, то на нашому українському телебаченні дуже доволі часто включалися в етери Латиніна. Ми могли бачити Дмитра Бикова. І тобто ми, я маю на увазі українці, вважали, що це наші союзники в протистоянні кремлівському режиму. Але коли ми почали досліджувати, аналізувати, ми зрозуміли, що, знаєте, це такий троянський кінь в нашому етері, що їхні меседжі, посили, які вони висловлюють в нашому етері, вони дуже часто перетинаються з меседжами Кремля. І ось тоді виникла ідея книги, яку ми, власне кажучи, підготували з професоркою Наталкою Стеблиною. Я хочу наголосити на тому, що ця книжка, ми принципово паперову версію видали англійською мовою. Тобто вона є українською онлайн і вона є англійською в паперовому. Чому англійською в паперовому? Тому що ми зрозуміли, що якщо ми, українці, інколи не одразу змогли з'ясувати, у чому небезпека хороших росіян, то ми уявили, що як же тоді людям на Заході, які дуже часто знаходяться під впливом російської культури, російської природи, то дуже часто готові тиснути руку цим хорошим росіянам, допомагати їм матеріально, щоб вони свої меседжі несли далі в маси. І ми зрозуміли, що треба не просто сказати іноземній аудиторії, от там ми хороші, хтось погані. Ні. Ми мали довести, аргументувати, чому їм не можна вірити. Тому що наша книга – це книга дослідження, і ми показуємо, що не так.
А можете навести кілька прикладів, що саме мається на увазі, які меседжі вони просувають, які перетинаються з меседжами Кремля?
Головний меседж, який вони просувають, це те, що це виключна війна Путіна. Тобто російський народ, він жертва Путіна, так само, як і український. Тобто вони дорівнюють.
Але це не так.
Якщо ми подивимось на опитування Незалежного центру Левада, є такий, то десь біля 80% росіян або підтримують свого президента, або вважають, що він, так би мовити, прав загалом. Ми не бачимо